Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
160 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. And one tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
And that's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
So, let's see. Best Picture. Well, I think that's going to be The Revenant. Best Director. I think that'll be González Iñárritu for The Revenant. Best Actor. I think Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant. And Best Actress. I think I'd probably go for Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn, although it'd probably go to Kate Blanchett for Carol. Probably need to have some sort of expert input in terms of selecting the winners, or the likely winners for the Academy Awards coming up in a few weeks' time. That probably means it's time for a rare Saturday treat for our live Southside listener. In fact, we can actually welcome the joy of film critic and a royal correspondent who's probably got heaps to say about the fact that Alicia Vikander, of course, what a startlingly wonderful performance she had in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Last year, has also done equally well in The Danish Girl. Welcome, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Hello, and indeed, it's good to be on the programme because this is a week. Remember, we've had firstly the BAFTA nominations and the Golden Globe ceremony, now the Oscar nominations.
And bookended by two 69-year-old folk popping their clogs. David Bowie at the start, Alan Rickman at the end. Amazing.
That's a tragedy indeed, and it's extraordinary. Of course I knew that David Bowie was a legend, but it was...
His role as the Goblin King in Labyrinth, I'm sure you will agree, Richard, will go down in cinematic history.
Well, I didn't see...
Quite apart from The Man Who Fell to Earth and Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Merry Christmas to Mr. Lawrence, and also Pontius Pilate in The Last Temptations.
Exactly.
Very, very impressive, but a massive... what I was mentioning was just as somebody who I admit, I mean, there are Bowie fans and we know that there are millions out there, to realize how extraordinary his influence was. I mean, it really, really was quite an eye-opener, because so influential over such a long period in so many in reincarnations. I mean, quite extraordinary.
Although, as two writers to The Independent have actually said, this very day, David Andrews from Lancashire, it's sad that prominent people feel the need to comment when a famous pop star dies. Who really cares what Tony Blair or David Cameron thought of David Bowie?
It is thoroughly silly and superficial to say that, because people felt, and the media reflected what people really, how they responded to news that had not been expected. Regarding the politicians, you could say they're jumping on bandwagons. Well, of course, but I mean, the point is that when a very famous, and David Bowie was very famous, individual dies, that is what politicians, I think, do, and certainly it was no surprise to me. I mean, it was, you know, this was a vast person of vast influence, and you would expect that academics out of touch, I'd say.
Well, a quote from Philip Cogan, another letter writer: no matter how popular David Bowie was, his death cannot warrant the hysterical attention it has provoked.
No, but this is the thing, where firstly, we're in an age of rolling news. Secondly, if somebody who's had such a significant influence on a particular field dies, you would expect them to reflect that, and of course the press to do so likewise. It would be ridiculous if they didn't.
Although, is this pop hysteria in the process of displacing traditional religion, with new popes being manufactured all the time to feed modern culture? Not my opinion, it's just the thoughts of Philip Cogan and a few writers, as far as The Independent is concerned. Anyway, we did a full tribute on Wednesday's Midweek Drive, which is available as a podcast. You can actually listen, obviously, again to that on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
And subsequently, Alan Rickman.
Yes, well, you know, another Harry Potter soul actually sort of heads off to join the original Dumbledore.
Well, you know, one of the extraordinary things about Rickman, I was fascinated doing quite a bit of research, of course, for obvious reasons, on him, to realize that in a survey, if you took what was considered the ideal human voice, it would be a mix between that of Jeremy Irons and that of Alan Rickman. And what links the two of them, the regrettable fact, Lyons, of course, it may still be rectified, but to my knowledge, and we only know the list of details up to 2003, that Rickman was never given a British honour. Regarding the fact that he was never nominated for an Oscar, and that, of course, since his death occurred on the day of the Oscar nominations, made a lot of news. If you look at the films he was in, and the performance...
Yeah, are you saying that Hans Gruber in Die Hard was not Academy Award-winning material?
One could argue that those sort of movies, and even the Sense and Sensibility part, or Close My Eyes, or An Awfully Big Adventure, or... I mean, you could name quite a lot of that he did. Harry Potter, obviously. But again, they didn't tend to be roles that attracted or would attract them, either quirky films or, like Die Hard, was a large-scale movie. But those type of films don't tend to be or to get Oscar nominations, other than occasionally sometimes in the technical qualities. There are exceptions, obviously, but if you actually look at his filmography, it's clear why this occurred, though it's very, very regrettable that it did occur, and very few actors of his eminence it's occurred to. Richard Burton was, of course, totally different because he'd had nominations, but it's rare that someone dies without being acknowledged at all by the Academy, if they're as well known and as respected as Richard.
There's always going to be a posthumous award, I'm sure.
And that is conceivable, but there haven't been many Oscars won posthumously. Of course, you think back at performances like Peter Finch in Network and so forth. I think the lead in El Postino was another who was nominated posthumously. The facts are that's very, very rare. But what was fascinating to me was the level of support and admiration for Rickman. Had this extraordinary presence. I mean, his his gaze transfixed you. He had a voice that was wonderfully, could metamorphose between the villainous, the sexy, the sensitive, and so many performances. I mean, the nation absolutely loathed him when he played Obadiah Slope. It's a wonderful, wonderful performance in Barchester Chronicles. And I mean, of all the slimy, horrible creatures, he really did inhabit that role, making him someone we loved to hate. And of course, the stage actor, I very much regret I didn't see him on stage. And having recently seen a superb revival of the Dangerous Liaisons at the Donmar, which I really thought was absolutely excellent, with Janet McTeer and Dominic West, I have to say that it would have been wonderful to see Alan Rickman as the Vicomte de Valmont, which is a role that not only brought him fame in the West End, but also a Tony Award on Broadway. And it's the stage. He did so much. And in film, one of my favorite roles, An Awfully Big Adventure, he could play tragic figures where he discovers that he's been having a relationship with someone to whom he's connected in a way he was unaware. Or, indeed, you could mention Close My Eyes, which shows the humor he was able to bring to a part, because he had a very dry wit, and that voice was could be
well,
extremely...
truly, madly, deeply, clearly. That's the line that, of course, was one of his early roles from that perspective. Let's move on to returning to that little event that's taking place in Los Angeles, of course, on the 28th of February. I don't believe that Ricky Gervais is going to be signed up to actually do another piece with them, but you never know. It could still be a last minute.
Rock, of course, is as edgy as
yes,
Oscars get.
Exactly.
Well, obviously, the intention is to draw in audiences by having Tina Fey and Amy Poehler Fuller did this brilliantly at the Globes, because they combined some saucy humour with what I would call real wit and.
Well, you see, there's the point, you see. Real wit.
The subtlety of the 10-ton hammer in that opening few minutes.
However, let's celebrate the fact that young Kate Winslet has actually got her seventh Oscar nomination for her supporting role in Steve Jobs.
And celebrate the fact she won a Golden Globe for it. Also, on the subject of Steve Jobs, I've seen it twice. I think it's a brilliant film. I very much regret it was omitted from the Oscar top 10, but I know very well the top 8, as it happened, for Best Picture. But, of course, we know why, because, very regrettably, Danny Boyle's masterpiece has sunk catastrophically at the box office, but its real merit shouldn't have been affected by that. I mean, the fact is, it's an imaginative film. I won't dwell on it, because I realize it is a lost cause. Aaron Sorkin, surprisingly, didn't get nominated for his...
Maybe they're all Microsoft users. That's the key thing. They don't want to go down the Apple routine. You heard some of my suggestions in terms of Best Picture. I mean, let's go through the list. I think there's actually nine, though. We've got The Big Short, of course, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, actually, right, I'm sure each other
are. Very well with 10 nominations. Mm. How many it wins with a movie like The
And of course, because it's a comedy, The Martian doesn't stand a chance.
I mean, Ridley Scott, in the acceptance speech at the Globes, said, comedy, question mark? Mm. No, of course this isn't a comedy. I mean, it has humorous moments, but it was a drama, and I thought it was extremely good. But science fiction films, of course, as well you know, never...
They just don't understand The Revenant, which, of course, is my tip to actually sweep the board.
Oh, you're right, Nelson. That will be only the fourth Western ever to have done so.
Mm. Room, and, of course, Spotlight, which I think will be worthy also-rans, but won't actually do the business.
I think Spotlight has been considered the favourite up to now. I think... This is being reassessed, because although Spotlight, and again I've just seen it again, it's a wonderful film. It is dramatic. It's about an expose of child abuse by priests in Boston, and it's an excellent film. And the supporting categories of the Oscars, members of the cast were nominated, but the facts are that The Revenant is very much an experience. I do have to be frank. I wondered, it opened in 3,800 cinemas in the States just over a week ago, and I wondered how it would do, because it is harrowing. I think that listeners will have already heard of some of the scenes.
Don't talk about the bear again. It's not that Baloo.
That's one of them, and that is the most memorable, but there are others. It's a pretty tough life for Hugh Glass, who's the Frontiersman, played by Leonardo DiCaprio so superbly, and his fifth acting nomination will lead to an Oscar. There's no question about that. But the fact that I'd wondered, would audiences flock to it? Would they go? And will they continue to go? Well, the facts are that they are most certainly going, and it's got all the hallmarks, not only of Best Picture, and obviously Best Actor for DiCaprio, but also, despite all the nominations for Mad Max and quite a few in the technical categories, of course, for Star Wars and so forth, what one must remember is the awesome feat of filming The Revenant, and the fact is that it has qualified in 12 for nominations. And I think it's going to win a lot of them because Alejandro Gonzalez de Iñárritu, and I think he will win Best Director, made it in the most terrifyingly difficult conditions, but he's got a certain technical excellence. Emmanuel Lubecki, the photographer, I think is going to win, I think it'll be three in a row, certainty for that cinematography. And that's just one. So, I mean, I may well go and see it again because, as I say, it is a sort of movie that stays with you. But the facts are that it's moving into position as the favorite now. Spotlight's excellence is undoubted, but it will also be The Revenant will pick up in the technical categories. Interesting, by the way, supporting actress, there's this problem as to whether Rooney Mara in Carol, and there have been three films in the set in the 1950s, and I really welcome that because Bridge of Spies and Brooklyn, which did very well with the Oscar nominations, and I'm delighted that that Ireland, by the way, three cheers because not only Michael Fassbender, of course, but Room and Brooklyn are Irish or part Irish films. That is important. For three movies set in the 1950s, it's very, very unusual.
As I said at the top of the piece, Richard, my outside bet would be Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn, although I suspect it'll go to Cate Blanchett for Carol.
And, well, in fact, it's going to be neither, because it does seem...
You're going to go Jennifer Lawrence, are you?
It'll be Brie Larson for Room. She plays a mother who's been kidnapped with her young son by a psychopath. And
Richard, we covered the book back in 2012. It's all done and dusted. Yes, so marvellous. We were ahead of the game on that one. I'll send you the link to our sort of book of the month thing. But yes, interesting. Okay, women, admittedly positive from that point of view. Best actor, I'd like it to go to Bryan Cranston. It won't, but it probably goes, you said, to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Bryan Cranston is very, very good indeed. And I mean, in a normal year,
we never have a normal year when it comes to the Oscars, Richard.
Well, like, in a year that hadn't got Leonardo DiCaprio, and in a year, as I say, Fassbender was, well, regrettably for Steve Jobs.
Where were the nominations for The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? That's what I say.
Well, I don't think you'll find any, unless I missed something, but The Danish Girl with Eddie Redmayne. I think, unfortunately, the film that we'll be discussing at the minute hasn't taken off in the way that certainly I would have hoped it would, but no one doubts the excellence of his performance.
And Alicia Vikander.
Alicia Vikander, because although the Best Actress category could have been extended, good gracious me, it could, thank goodness it included, which it did not at the BAFTA nominations, Charlotte Rampling for 45 years, absolutely brilliant performance, wonderful film. I mean, it really, really, she deserves it. It's a career high point. It'll be won, as I say, by Brie Larson. The fact they put Rooney Mara as supporting actress, where she was in the Globes against Cate Blanchett for Best Actress, will mean, I think, that she's pretty certain to win it. Though Cate Blanchett, Cate Winslet conceivably could. But Vikander, very, very good performances. And also the fact that she's nominated for supporting actress in The Danish Girl. It's a problem with these categories, like calling The Martian a comedy. They do play around with...
Well, it's all... it carries the contemporary culture of postmodernism. Richard, stay with us. We're going to take a short musical break. We're going to come back to you to obviously discuss the controversy that's likely to arise this year. Of course, previous years, in fact, last year, we were talking about the sad death of women nominations.
Oscar's so white. Yes,
exactly.
Indeed, a lot of
so we'll talk about that, and of course The Danish Girl, and more after this. Open Channel D, indeed, is originally composed by Jerry Goldsmith, of course, the theme to the television series Man from U.N.C.L.E. And we had a little smidgen of that in the vastly overlooked, but I'm sure soon to be reappraised, classic spy movie of 2015. As Richard, I'm sure, will not agree with me on, but never mind. Let's progress. We're talking to Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, to African-American filmmaker Reginald Hudlin, producer, of course, of Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained, who calls the omission of any black or ethnic minority actors in the Oscar nominations tragic, although he will actually produce the ceremony itself. And this is all part of a growing move that David Harewood, of course, British actor, has discussed and actually joined a chorus of criticism over the lack of an Oscar nomination for any black or ethnic minority person in any of the acting categories, and he's calling on those who attend next month's awards ceremony to do so in blackface, in inverted commas, in process, turning up with the hashtag OscarsSoWhite.
Well, firstly, I'd say the black idea of turning up in blackface, I mean, we don't get that because it'll take away, certainly the publicity would be enormous if people did, and it would take away from the excellence.
We've just got stepped away from the Black and White Minstrel Show a good long time ago. We don't want to go back there.
I think that we ought to look at this in perspective. Firstly, last year it was absolutely disgraceful, and this was commented on, absolutely right, that Selma, David Yellowo, playing Martin Luther King, that, you know, the lack of nominations there, and there was a great deal of fuss about that. When you complain, and I mean, even complaining, you mentioned women's roles, one of the strengths of this year are there were too many top-class actresses to be fitted into the various categories, and that is a good thing at long last. Hollywood also is undergoing, or at least pretending, going through the motions, you could say, after the hacking of those Sony emails regarding gender equality and pay, and also more top roles for women is on the agenda and will continue, I hope, to be on the agenda. So when we look at All White on the Night, I think that it would have been Idris Elba, for example, in Beasts of No Nation. I mean, that was a film that should have been in the top 10 for Best Picture. The reason it wasn't may have been linked to the fact that it was streamed by Netflix simultaneously with its release and boycotted by major movie theaters. That may also have played a part in the fact that Idris Elba didn't amazingly get nominated for Best Supporting Actor, which he should have. Having said that, I do think it's a very unfortunate year for African-American actors because I can't see, I mean, Michael B. Jackson for Best Actor for Creed, he was superb. Sylvester Stallone will win the Best Supporting Actor Oscar because Hollywood is very sentimental. He will beat Mark Rylance, for example, and Tom Hardy. But the facts are that this particular year, and unfortunately, and perhaps Hollywood could hopefully in future years, because there are so many, as we all know, some of the top actors in Hollywood are African-Americans. I mean, it just so happened this year that there were very few roles. I mean, Straight Outta Compton, an edgy movie.
It was written by white men. It was written by three white people.
Yes, that is true, you see. But the point that this when you have a campaign, you ought to have, as they did with, for example, with Selma, that you ought to have examples of who should have won and have been left out. Now, Idris Elba, I absolutely agree. But Creed, an excellent movie. But how could Michael B. Jordan was going to fit in with, you've already got Matt Damon, you've got Michael Fassbender, you've got Michael Bryan Cranston, you've got Eddie Redmayne, you've got the Leonardo DiCaprio, even Tom Hanks couldn't be squeezed in for Bridge of Spies. So it's a sort of campaign that, I hope Hollywood learns from the fact that all 20 were white of the nominees of the top categories for acting. But if you look at what we've seen with the nominees, we see the improvement, thank goodness, and at long last, with reference to women's roles. Let's hope that's reflected and this controversy is reflected, not by some antics on the night, on the big night of the ceremony, but by having more of the top black actors in roles that get them nominated.
And indeed Will Smith, of course, who was in the football drama Concussion.
Yes, I haven't seen Concussion yet, but I certainly look forward to seeing it.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if The Big Short won Best Picture? It would just be wonderful to watch
that. This is the challenge how you make... Again, I'm talking about comedy. I've called it a comedy drama myself, but director Adam McKay, how you make a comedy drama about the financial crisis, and it's very, very dark. I mean, I was fascinated by this movie. People have been, because it's imaginatively filmed, it's got an intelligent script, and we meet the very, very, very few in the financial community in the United States who could see the crash was coming. Meet Michael Burry, played by Christian Bale, and a very colorful character, a hedge fund operator who's unconventional, to put it mildly, who realizes that the housing market's unstable and based on subprime loans, which are very risky, and he bets on this. Everyone's furious with him, but they can't stop him. And, well, we know subsequently what success he has, and, well, word is spread of this, and the hedge fund manager, Mark Baum, played by Steve Carroll, is alerted and agrees, and subsequently, with others, there are those who find that any institution is only too pleased to take a bet, that there's nothing wrong with the system. And what we see in this film, the one problem is, for those like me who aren't particularly orientated towards facts and financial matters, there is a lot of detail in it, as there was in the real crash. I mean, this is a movie which...
Can't believe you just said, as a journalist, Richard, you're not too oriented towards facts. It's all right.
Financial facts,
exactly,
what I said.
Yes.
I rely upon you to misrepresent me.
Of course.
I said once. This is a movie that really does... Well, it sucks it to you, because bits of it are very, very funny. But there's nothing funny about the abominable unscrupulousness and greed and chaos of the whole financial system that came crashing down, had to be built up by the taxpayer. The film has a lot of fun with that. Fun, as I say, isn't the operative word here. Is it
as good as The Wolf of Wall Street?
The Wolf of Wall Street is totally different, because it was fantastic. I mean, you really swung with the wolf. Or maybe there are those who secretly wish they could have swung with the wolf during that time. It's the same sort of indictment of a society that has clearly gone completely mad.
As Gore Vidal would have said, it's like the Roman Empire, the last days.
Well, it's interesting, because this movie tries to explain what happened, why it happened. It has interviews with those, because the various characters start finding out, and the more they look into it, the worse it gets. You think it couldn't get anything any worse, and they discover that it is. Those involved who have not had to answer, well, this is the indictment of the obvious, but it is nonetheless very clever. Christian Bale, Steve Carroll, all the actors here, and the smaller roles are very, very good. But, I mean, this is a good script, and the characters talk to camera. You know, they tell you what's happened, or perhaps even what should have happened and didn't happen.
Richard, we have 90 seconds to cover the excitement of the Danish girl.
I can't properly...
She couldn't...
90 seconds. Eddie Redmayne's in the transgender role as Lily Elbe, a woman born into a man's body, who gradually discovers her sexuality. Is absolutely marvellous, and I'd also pay tribute to his supportive wife, Gerda, played by, Alicia Vikander. Both of them are painters.
Well, as we know, it was the quality of her work in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. which led to that.
As we know, it's a good year for her, because, of course, Ex Machina...
Exactly, exactly.
...recognition.
Yes.
But both set in Copenhagen and in Paris, and also with a wonderful period feel. We're looking at the 1920s, 1930s, and we're also looking at a period where the subject of the transgender person was not understood, and where, when sex reassignment surgery, which is what Lily undergoes, it was something that was embryonic.
It was science fiction. Gender realignment. Why would you do it? It's very strange. But there we are. Apparently people have said by the end of the 21st century we'll be changing gender as though we change our clothes.
But I would say that this is a love story. It's a love story about the relationship between Lily and Gerda. And also there's a rather good performance by Matthias Schoonhartz as Hans, who's the first boy who kissed Einar, who is the original persona before he becomes...
Well, there you have it.
It's a painterly film. People complain it isn't dramatic enough. It's got a wonderful sense of period. It is a challenging subject. What more drama did you...
And
really
there goes the final whistle. We have covered the 8 nominations for the Best Picture at Oscars. We've looked at the protests which are within that. We've had a little review, obviously, of The Danish Girl and, of course, the excitement of The Big Short. Richard Fitzwilliams, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Yes, indeed, I most certainly have. We also mentioned the Globes and, fleetingly, the BAFTAs.
Well, you'll be back on your usual slot, presumably Thursday morning at around about 8:15.
Which I look forward to.
There we are, and if you want to listen to all that again, just check that you can actually make the right wages, as predicted by Richard Fitzwilliams. You can actually just download the podcast in a matter of moments from now. You might indeed be listening to this as a podcast as we speak. Richard, take care of yourself. We'll speak again very soon.
And many thanks.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.